This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen to. Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. As always, I am Mike Penna, the Baron of the Backstretch, and with you for the next hour, you are tuned in live throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM Channel 201, or you're listening to the free live streaming of the show or the archived podcast, and of course, you're doing that on our HRRN website, which is horseracingradio.net. Really happy to have you along for the ride with me over the course of the next hour. Today's show figures to be highly emotional for my special guest. It was just 11 days ago that his talented 5-year-old sprinter, Zenden, crossed the finish line first in what would be the biggest career win for both horse and trainer. That victory came in the $1.5 million Grade 1 Dubai Golden Shaheen. Zenden stopped the clock. How about this? In 109.01, that's a new track record. But that triumph turned to horrific tragedy just moments later. Zenden took a bad step, unseated Antonio Freixo, the jockey who was aboard, and had to be put down following an injury to his left front leg. As you can imagine, dealing with all of those emotions has been extremely difficult for today's guest and all of the connections of Zenden. So I really appreciate the time here today with trainer Carlos David, who is with me on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Carlos, I know it's been a very difficult time for you. Greatly appreciate you taking the time, my friend.
Hey, Mike. Yeah, thanks for having me. I know, it's you called me earlier in the week, and I just need a little bit more time to, you know, coming back to the States and, catching up with work and everything on top of, you know, dealing with the accident and all that. Just need a few more days to just kind of get everything together and be able to sit down and spend some time with you.
Yeah, I can't even imagine what that was like for you, what it was like for the owners. I mean, this is a game that, let's face it, it will often provide the highest of highs and the lowest of lows, but it doesn't often happen within a matter of seconds, Carlos.
Yeah, I mean, definitely early in my career, it was something that, you know, of course, all trainers kind of agree with me. We come into this business trying to get to the top. You know, that's what we hear. That's what we, you know, the whole business is created around winning races, you know. And by all means, you know, we try to do the best we can to do it in a safely manner, you know. From training to grooming to how walking to the races, you know, we try to keep everything as safe as possible for everyone. And it was definitely a moment where, you know, it was unbelievable for me to be able to get to that point of, you know, my 4-year training and have everything kind of collapse at the same time. So it was very tragic, yeah.
When you think about Zenden, and I know you spent plenty of time thinking about the horse over the past 10 or 11 days now, what are some of the fondest memories you have of him?
Well, I got the horse, let's say, around like late October, late August. And very nice, good-looking horse. You know, I had a couple horses with the same connection prior to the horse, and I knew the horse because the owner had called me and told me, he talked about the horse before I even had him. Pletcher had the horse, and he kept telling me to look at the horse, just look at the replays, look at the race that he's been running in, and he was looking to make a change. But, you know, the horse was with Pletcher, and, you know, eventually the horse went out to take a break. He had, like, a minor injury and behind. It was something related to, like, high surgery, and, you know, the horse just needed time off. And I think the last race that he ran with Pletcher was in February of 2020. So while this whole, you know, the pandemic and everything is going on and we're trying to keep Gulfstream racing alive and all that, in the middle of all of that, I get two horses that were, you know, coming from this owner, LLP Performance. One was Ralston and the other one was Sendin. So they came in and, you know, the first impression was like very, very muscular horse, very, you know, just medium size. It's good size, you know, but like, you know, nice. I mean, the horse was good, in good hands. You know, it was with Pletcher and he was well taken care of. And the farm that he went to, I know the people, you know, Carla, and they're good friends, and they do a great job keeping the horse in good condition and everything. I had no complaints about the horse. And, you know, I started training the horse very light because the horse, you know, was, you know, he coming from a layoff. So, you know, of course, everything really light, jogging for like 2 weeks, and then all went on to like gallop the horse. Eventually, the horse went to run at Laurel for his first start because there was no conditions for the horse here. Already won a stake and he won allowance. We don't really want, he don't want to lose him for a tag. So we ended up sending the horse to Laurel to run in an open allowance, which he won after, you know, first time he ran with me, he won. Mm-hmm. And I was really happy because really, you know, I really liked the horse, you know, and he was doing really good with me and, you know, he was sound. So.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a special horse, and obviously he took you to the top. You said all trainers, when they start out, and it's true, they all want to get to the top, and you want to be playing at that high level, and you were there. Of course, it was taken away from you shortly after the race. Unfortunate. This is part of the game, and it's horrific, and we all feel for you. We all feel for the connections. We all feel for the horse. Many trainers, Carlos, will not have the opportunity to say goodbye to their horse when something like this happens. You, and I'll call it fortunate, you were fortunate enough to be there with Sendin as he was being put down after the race. Take me back to that moment. That had to be gut-wrenching.
I mean, just talk about something so surreal as to standing by the wire waiting for your horse to run a good race. You know what I mean? I wanted my horse to win, yes, but, you know, as a long shot, you know, I love my horse. I like my horse to win. You know, we run the horses in those races to win, perform good. So I spoke to Antonio and I told him, I said, look, the main thing for me and for this, the most important thing for me is to break good and break straight, because I don't want to be on the outside and try to look for that spot. A lot of the jockeys will run over to get a good position and like maybe take a couple of horses in the process. And I don't want to do that. So I was trying to be as safe as possible, and I told Antonio, so the first 70 yards you run, I want you to break straight and then move over, because I don't want any trouble, you know? And it was just perfect, you know what I mean? I couldn't believe. I told him there was a lot of speed on the inside, and, you know, more than likely you're going to end up like third on the outside. I just don't want to be behind horses. I don't care if you're 3 wide, 4 wide. But I want to be clear. And he eventually will make the lead. That's what I told him. I didn't think that he was going to outbreak the field in that way. You know what I mean? I know he's fast, but I just, that day he was just unbelievable. And it just shocked everyone. You know, it shocked me. And it was good. I mean, it was It was going into the race, you know, you were thinking like, oh, I'm not going to cry. You know, what happened if the horse wins? You know, when you're not going to cry, you know. And then that happens and everybody's happy and everybody's crying because we're happy, you know. And then I look at the screen and I see Antonio falling off. And everybody's still celebrating, like, wait, the jockey fell off. So I'm running and I'm concerned about the jockey because I saw him fall off. So the first concern was that the jockey's okay. You know, I thought he's going to get hurt. Mm-hmm. So I'm running and Chad Summers was with us and he's running. And we go underneath the rail and you go into the grass because the grass is on the outside of the main track. And we're running. We see Antonio getting up and he's running towards the horse. And I'm like, you know, I saw the horse standing. I mean, the horse never fell. He pulled up on his own. And I see the horse standing there. And Antonio is running towards the horse. We're running and I slow down. And I'm trying to celebrate again with Chad. I was like, oh, no, he's okay. And Chad said, no, the horse is not okay. And I said, what do you mean? I turn around and I see the ambulance coming and like, you know, trying to like pick up his leg, and I'm like, so I start running again. And Antonio has looked at the horse coming back to me, sees me, and he says, I'm sorry. And I said, he just kind of like told me that, and I went past him and running towards my horse, and I see them putting the blanket around him, and I just kept screaming, like, don't kill my horse. So, yeah, I went there, and I just want to see if there was a way to save him, you know. But it was too much. It was a very severe breakdown.
Yeah, yeah, highly emotional for trainer Carlos David, who is my special guest here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. Carlos, did Antonio say anything to you after everything was finished and you got a chance to talk to Antonio? Did he give you any more insight as to what might have happened at that moment after the finish line?
Well, I didn't see after what happened. You know, I got there and someone was hugging him and I watched him, you know, put him down, and I spent my last minute with him. Then I just, you know, I just, without words, you know, I just went back and everybody's in shock. I'm in shock. First thing I do is call my girlfriend back in the States. She works with me, my assistant. And I told her what happened. And she's already crying, bawling. And I'm like, put my horse down. So I'm walking back with Chad Summers, and you know, it's still very emotional. You know, that's why I didn't really wanted to do the interview, because I, you know, it's just a lot of people don't understand like how much I care about, you know. So I go back and I see Antonio on the podium. And he's talking to a little bit of the media, and then he leaves, you know, he leaves. And I go back, and everybody's is just, you know, hugging me and saying they're sorry, and everybody's crying. And, you know, I just wanted to call the owner and tell him, you know, what happened. I called the owner, the owner partner, and I told him that the horse had to be put down too, and he didn't know either. So everybody's kind of in the States, like, you know, still like they don't know exactly what happened. You know.
Yeah, yeah. I know the owners.
I hear a little bit of. Hello.
Yeah, yeah, I know the owners, Carlos, remained in Dubai. You came back. You had to work on getting back to business here in the United States, but the owners remained in Dubai until the necropsy could be performed. Have you received any word on what that might have showed and what might have gone wrong?
Well, like I was saying, I went back and I just, you know, first time being in Dubai, you really don't know. I mean, you see in television, you know, I've seen it many times. I've seen the World Cup many times, and you always go back and celebrate and do the presentation of the trophy and everything. I just, you know, everybody just kind of didn't know what to do. You know, everybody's kind of like being respectful and giving my space. And you know, I just wanted to talk to Antonio to just kind of clarify what he thought about it. Like, what did he think about, or what he thought happened? Because everybody is like, we don't know what happened. So a little, like, half an hour goes by, and, you know, we just go back to the owners are there, and, you know, they have a table upstairs. So we just, you know, we just walk up there, and I just had a little bit of water. And I just, you know, I'm not even watching the races. I'm just on the phone talking to, you know, my family and my, you know, my team here at the barn and my assistants, you know, talking about the horse, and everybody's just, it's just destroyed. You know, they can't believe what happened. Nobody believes what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. So, they haven't released
some of the people that work for, you know, the relations over there, a lady called Stephanie, I forgot her last name, Cooley or something like that. And she's very nice. She's the one that, you know, helped us all the trainers through the process of, you know, getting to Dubai and you know, the getting licensed and getting situated, all that stuff, and get us in touch with the vets and the training hours and all this. So she was very helpful, and she came to us and she came to me. And then the first thing I told her is, you know, I want my horse to be a member. I want to know what's going to happen after this. Like, you know, I obviously, you know, we want to, you know, maybe the horse, you know, if the horse is going to get cremated, like we need some kind of, you know, like ashes or something. I don't know. I just never been in a situation like this. And she was in the same page. She just didn't know what to tell me. And she's like, we don't know. You know, I don't know what's going to happen after this. And, you know, everything is very, like, happened very quick. I just don't know who to talk to. So she was very helpful in that matter. I mean, she just, you know, she didn't know at the moment, like, what was going to happen. She said, you know, they'll bring the trophies to you and the owner, and then, you know, of course there was going to be no celebration or anything like that. Yeah. I just asked if Antonio was okay, and she said that he had hurt his hand a little bit, his wrist, when he fell, but he was okay. He was riding in the Dubai World Cup military law, so I'm sure he wasn't, you know, he was in shock too about everything that happened. And on top of that, he's still, you know, he has a little bit of a hand injury. So, but at least, you know, he wasn't, you know, like severely injured or anything like that, which, you know, brought a little bit of relief. Because, you know, could just imagine if you know, if that happened. If the horse falls down and he gets hurt too, you know, like, that would have been catastrophic.
Yeah, it compounds everything. There's no doubt about it. It just horrific situation. And I know it's still fresh for you. You're still dealing with it. We're going to focus on something more positive here in a minute. But just to confirm, there has been no conversation yet that you know of as to what might have been discovered in the necropsy in terms of what could have gone wrong, right? They haven't released any of that yet from Dubai.
I mean, I was scheduled to leave Dubai at 2:30 in the morning, like, you know, after that night. So I basically went back after the big race. I saw, you know, the D'Angelo's horse run, and then we just left. There was like a celebration, not a celebration, but they did like a display of lights for the passing of the Sheik's brother, which happened like that week that we were there. So there was no fireworks or nothing like that. They did like a presentation at night, some lights show, and that was really nice. And then we left after that. I went back to my hotel. I drove back to my hotel, and immediately it was like almost 11:30, and there was a car waiting for me to take me to the airport because I was leaving so early in the morning. So when I was at the airport, I saw an email from the main vet at the clinic. He had gone to my hotel to talk to me in person and express his, his sentiment to me and my team about the horse, the passing of the horse. And he said I wasn't there, so he emailed me. And he just wanted to tell me that he was the one in charge of, of the autopsy and all that for the horse. And he would just keep me informed with everything. And I responded to him and I said, thank you, let me know what's going on, I know the owners are going to stay there, until for a few more days, in case you guys, cause they don't know either. They want their horse ashes or shoes, something, they kind of want closure with the horse. I had to leave so early, but they were going to stay there one more week. So I gave them the information. And, I told him to just let me know if I can be in any help or let me know what's going on with the results. I don't know what was the breakdown situation, or what was the result of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
it's difficult. There's no doubt about it. And trainer Carlos David, who is my special guest here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton, doing his best to move forward after what happened in Dubai just 11 days ago. Carlos, how does a trainer move forward after something as catastrophic as what happened 11 days ago?
Well, to tell you the truth, a lot of the feelings are still pretty much, alive. It's like, to me, it seems like you lose a family member. You can hear me. It's not every time I talk about the horse, every time I see a post about the picture, we just got his trunk back from Dubai like 2 days ago. And everybody's dying because all his halter, his blanket is there, his bandages. And, it's still kind of, it hurts a lot, because, on top of everything, then you have to hear all the bad comments and all the hate, it's because, we're in a moment in time in the business where, there's a lot of negativity around it. There's a lot of hate and a lot of fingers pointing, I think we need to work better, especially the horsemen, better and helping each other instead of putting each other down, because it just doesn't help anyone, I try not to, get on social media as much. I only put a video that my girlfriend kind of put together, with some of the videos I had recorded when I was in Dubai for me. And I posted that because there's a lot of hate. There's a lot of good people. There's a lot of people that know me. There's a lot of people that know my team, that know how hard we work and how much we love the horses, that, that they wanted to know how I felt about it and how, and of course, they know, but I kind of wanted to put out there too for people that don't know me, that follow the racing in Dubai, because it was just, I don't know why it happened. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just an accident. It's just a crazy accident. I mean, we're liable in this sport for it. I mean, jockeys are liable to get injuries. Horses are liable to get injuries. We don't want them to happen, but they do happen.
And, yeah, well, I think the one thing,
like,
Carlos, that
sport.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say that. I think it's the one thing is that injuries happen in every single sport, but unfortunately, when our equine athletes get injured, sometimes they can't be saved, and it's life threatening, and it costs them their life, and that's the big difference, and it's so sad and it's so tragic, and it is part of what this game is about. And there have been so many measures taken, so many people working tirelessly to make sure that our surfaces are now safer and that the training regimens for horses are now done in a certain way that it can help avoid some of those injuries. But sometimes these things happen, and unfortunately for many, there's no explanation. It just happens, and I think that's what's so difficult for people to accept. We're about 2 minutes away from the commercial break, Carlos, but I do want to ask you, you said you tried to stay away from social media and not read all the comments that people post out there. How difficult, they say athletes don't want to read the newspaper and the press clippings. How difficult is it for a trainer not to look at that kind of stuff?
It's very difficult because not only you have to deal with it, like, online, but you have to deal with it around you, and then, you know, you go out there training and, you know, somebody comes to you, somebody that knows you, somebody that cares about you, tells you, oh, so-and-so person is talking about you, so the person doesn't agree with the way you train, or so-and-so, you know, said that you don't mean what you say. You know, it's just, yeah. It's every day, you know, it's every day, and you know, it's just, it really it bothers me that the bad stuff stands out more than the good stuff in people's minds, you know, and just like, not everyone, but like, I wish that the good stuff would make, you know, more the news than the worst, the bad stuff, you know, and people have to talk about the bad stuff all the time, and it just drags along, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a daily thing here, you know, it's just a daily thing, and it's just, yeah, it's something you have to kind of deal with it somehow, you know. I concentrate on my work, and that's how I deal with it.
Yeah, put your head down and go to work and just keep moving forward. Talking with trainer Carlos David here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Carlos, stay with me. We're going to get to a commercial break. When we come back, we will talk about much more pleasant things, including your very first career victory, which came back in 2018. We'll do that when we return. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.
Fasig Tipton selected yearling sales are back in business. Nominate your yearlings today to these industry-leading sales. The July sale, to be held July 13th and 14th in Lexington, Kentucky, will feature the return of the Freshman Sire Showcase. The 100th Saratoga sale will take place August 9th and 10th, and the New York Bred Yearling sale will be held August 15th and 16th in Saratoga. Selected sales, superior results. Nominate now at FasigTipton.com. Make Woodbine the place to train and race your thoroughbred in 2021. Take advantage of competitive purse structures with huge bonuses for Ontario breds and a Woodbine backstretch equipped with a 1 mile dirt training track, a 7 furlong turf training track, a 2 furlong sand ring, and a 1/2 mile European jogging path. Racing surfaces include a 1 mile all weather Tapeta main track, a 7 furlong inner turf course, and the 1.5 mile EP Taylor turf course. Opening day is April 17th. Follow us at Woodbine TB on social media and reach out to our team at woodbine.com.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And Zenon is the leader for Antonio Fresh, who is out by four. Wildman Jack begins to stalk it, followed by Good Effort. Switzerland is down the outside. Canvas is weaving a passage through. Red Lazelle is late down the outside, but Zenon clear inside the 200-meter mark. Red Lazelle begins to steam home with Canvas, but Zenon from the outside draw for Antonio Fresh, who has stolen the golden chip. Lane, it is Zenon winning well.
That was a 50-1 upset in track record time 11 days ago. It ended in tragedy after Zenon took a bad step after the race, had to be put down. You heard that story in the first half of the program with my special guest, trainer Carlos David. He was extremely emotional in talking about it, but I really appreciate him taking time to tell his story here on Trainer Talk this evening. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on HRRN. If you missed any portion of Carlos's comments in the first half of the program or any of our Trainer Talk shows, you can listen to all of them at your leisure, horseracingradio.net, the podcast available shortly after we finish up here at 7 o'clock Eastern time. Well, Carlos, I know it had to be difficult even to listen to that call again, but that was Craig Evans with the call, that victory. We already went through that. You talked about the emotions that you went through, that your team went through, the owners went through. This was a journey for you, my friend, that began back in Colombia, where you grew up, but you came to the United States, I guess, around the age of 16. Walk me back through the early days of Carlos David.
Yes. I came to the U.S. when I was 16, after finishing high school in Colombia, and I was greeted by my uncle and my aunt, and at the house in Mon, New York, Long Island, actually, and it's right outside Belmont Park, which is where I first started working. I started walking huts for Billy Mott while I was still going to Sewanaka High School to get my GED. And it was me and Jason, which is my uncle, the one that galloped Sendon. We came to the States together. We grew up together, and we just basically just live in the States, doing everything the same together. We had passion for horses growing up in Colombia. We used to go to this polo farm outside the city and ride the horses there bareback and go catch the horse out on the field and ride it back to, you know, the breeding shed and all that stuff for the mares. And it was, I always liked it. You know, I was getting on horses. It was something that I think was in my blood. I had a couple uncles that used to be jockeys. And I don't know, it's something that is kind of like always been in the family a little bit. And then we came to the States and it just kept going. And, my uncle kind of introduced us into the racing business, walking for Billy Mott and then eventually grooming for Billy Mott. You know, we want to ride horses, you know, we like taking care of them and stuff. And in school, you know, we learn a lot, but, in reality, that's what we wanted to do ever since we were in Colombia was ride the horses. So we went to Aiken. My uncle has a friend that trains horses and it's called the Stonerside Farm. It was later owned by Darley. But I think the owner of the farm at the time was the owner of the Houston Texans, actually. And I remember this because when we got there, the first thing they gave us was a bunch of Houston Texans clothing, like shirts and jackets and hats. And we're like, what is all this? And Tim Jones was the trainer. He taught us a lot. He said, well, the owner, he owns the Texans, so he always brings all these merchandise. So So it was cool. It was a good experience. We learned a lot. We learned how to ride horses. Tim Jones taught us how to break babies, and we were there for like, I don't know, 6 months, something like that, before going back to Billy Mott, and he gave us a job as exercise riders. Our first job back to New York, back in New York, was for Billy Mott again, and we were so green. We were like nowhere near galloping the horses that were ready to run, you know. So Billy Mott sends us to Saratoga, where, you know, at the time, well, all the babies were, and horses that weren't ready to run. So they sent us to Saratoga, and we just kind of, you know, learned a little bit more and a little bit more until we, you know, I mean, I worked for Billy Mott for about 5-6 years, something like that, just galloping and, you know, doing foreman job and, like, helping around and all that stuff. But definitely learned a lot from Billy. You know, he was a good mentor. I think he taught us a lot. I mean, Jason, he ended up, Uncle Jay, he ended up staying with Billy Mott for another 5 years. I mean, he worked with Billy Mott for about 10, 11 years, something like that. And I went on to work for different people because I wanted to do more. I always wanted to be involved in the racing. You know, I wanted to be in different area. I mean, I couldn't be a jockey because I was too big. To be a jockey, but I was a good exercise rider, I believe. I think it was. And Jay, he's always been really small, very very light. So he was 100 pounds. He went a different route. He wanted to be a jockey. So we took different paths, and I went on to be an assistant trainer for, you know, at first I was an assistant, kind of like an assistant trainer for Newsom. I went to Momo Park, and I was kind of like under the one of the assistants' wing, and I was just in charge there, you know, but I wasn't like an official assistant, you know. But I learned a lot too. I was there for, you know, and I love Jersey. I like jerseys. I think it's right by the shore, and it's just a cool place to be. I always like Jersey. And you know, I went on to work for different, really a lot of trainers. I worked for Rick Violet. I worked for Wayne Catalano, and I always just like to move and just learn from different people. You know what I mean? Like how they like to do things, how they handle horses, or some better than others, stuff like that, you know, but everybody's different, you know, but everybody was always pretty good. You know, I never saw like somebody being abusive, you know, I never like over, you can believe me or not, but I never, or maybe it was just the people that I chose to work for. I never saw anybody just really mistreat a horse, or like watch a horse sleep on the ground or anything like that, you know? And if people seen that in the past, maybe somewhere, I mean, I don't know. It hasn't been my experience. I always been kind of follow the bigger circuits, you know, always been either Belmont or Goldstream Park or Keeneland. I spent some time at Keeneland too, working for Rusty Arnold, Fred Seitz. I worked at I actually worked one season for Windstar Farm, riding the stallions. I actually rode Sendent's mom stallion, which I rode this, when he was a stallion at Windstar. Along with Spicetown, it was Spicetown, Victor Gallup, Shar Humor, and a few others. I can't remember. Deserted Humor was there, but I couldn't ride him because he was like 24. And Tisnow was also there, but I didn't ride him because he was just massive and he was dangerous, you know. So I got on a few of those horses, and it's just I just feel like there's so much to do in the horse racing, you know, and I wanted to cover all bases, you know, growing up and getting involved with the horse racing. I wanted to do it all, you know. I wanted to, from breaking babies to being an assistant trainer. I couldn't be a jockey, of course, but everything else I wanted to do, you know. I wanted to learn everything. And working for different people, I think, is the right, you know, just like you're like a sponge. You just learn from everyone, you know. And everyone is, all the trainers are talented in their own way. You know, they all have something to teach you. And you know, I love it. I mean, I loved it when I was in Kentucky. I loved it when I was in Jersey. I loved it when I was in New York. I have I grew up most of my, you know, from when I was 16 all the way to when I was like 20. I was in New York. And Florida has been my home for the past, I don't know, 8 years maybe.
It's been
been here for over 20 years, and this is my life. You know, this is what I do.
Yeah, and it's been quite a ride, Carlos. And you mentioned some very prominent names when you talk about being around Bill Mott and starting with him, and then Rusty Arnold and Fred Seitz, and you mentioned Windstar and being able to get on stallions there and be around some of the top horses that we've seen in our sport. You know, there in the first half of the show, we talked about the fact that you have really tried to stay away from social media the past 10 days and not, you know, tune out some of the haters. Some of that may come from the fact that you spent 5 years working as an assistant to Jason Service, who, as we know, last year federally indicted last March. That situation, you know, has come to light throughout the year last year. Do you find sometimes, Carlos, that maybe because of that time you spent working with Jason, that when something like this happens with Zenden, you almost become guilty by association, even though you're a completely different person and a completely different trainer?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, you know, I just want to say, like, people who know me and know me from even before I worked for Jason Service know that I do everything by myself. Okay, I earn what I have working hard and for myself. Nobody gives me anything. Okay, everything that I have is because I earn it and because I work hard. That's the first thing I want to say. People don't know me. People don't know me. And the fact that I work for Jason, there was just another job for me. It was just another job, just like I work for Chad Brown, just like I work for Rick Violet. Rest in peace. Rick Violet was like a very talented trainer, very nice person that I work for. Okay?
Yep.
And it's just that people, how can they judge somebody but because I work there? I mean, I was with Jason for 4 years, so I mean 4 or 5 years, something like that. And when you go out on your own, okay, you want to do good. And Jason was a good trainer, and in my eyes, he was a really good trainer. Okay, when I was working for him, and he had two assistant trainers. He had one assistant trainer in New York, which was like his main assistant, and I was the assistant here in Florida and New Jersey. So I traveled back in Florida, New Jersey, and Florida, and back and forth, Jersey and Florida, and that was my circuit. So when I started with Jason, you know, just like every job, you know, you start off and you don't know the system, and just you want to learn the system, and you want to grow in there. And you know, basically the very basic stuff that the assistants do is like go saddle the horses, check the horses' legs, make sure everything is fine. Joseph was, you know, really, you know, come early in the morning, check the horses with you, be on top of everything. That was the thing that I learned the most about Jason, was being on top of everything that is going on in the barn, who left feed, who's sick, or you know, what time is the vet coming to treat the horses that are going to breathe, stuff like that. You had to be quick. You had to be on the ball. And I spent 4 years working for Jay, and, you know, we had a lot of success. I mean, it was a barn it was my first claiming barn, really, because the names that I named is barns that, you know, like Billy Mudd and Chad Brown and Rick Valley are not really claiming barns. You know, they're barns that, like, they have their, you know, big names. They have, all, you know, horses that are bred, like, outstanding, you know, nice bar farms to send them horses. And then, you know, I never had to. It was my first time working for a claiming bar, really. And so I wanted to learn that. I wanted to learn how to, you know, how to claim horses and, you know, get them better and then win races after that. And, you know, the first thing I learned from Jason was, like, how we just took care of, you know, the horses when they claim it, and they're like, you know, they lost a little bit of weight, and it seems like they didn't take care of the hood, the shoes, and their feet were not good, and we get the dentist to come and check their mouth. That was the first things we did, and I liked that, and I liked claiming horses. I loved it. I loved the game, and I loved the claiming game was good. I liked it. It was something new for me. So this gave me an idea to become a trainer, because I don't, you know, when you try to be a trainer and nobody knows you, you don't have money, it's hard for you to get good owners, you know what I mean? Or get, not good owners, but like get, you know, like the good horses, I want to say, like the top names, the top farms. You're not going to get that because you're very small. Nobody knows you. So for me, learning the claiming game was important because that was a way for me to start out. If I'm going to go over on my own, this was the way for me to start. You know, I get a couple people that, you know, might want a fresh trainer and start claiming a couple horses. And, you know, if I do good with the horses, then, you know, get them better, get them back to life, feeding better. Put some weight into them, they'll run good. I know a happy horse is going to run good. You know, that's all I know.
Yeah.
And so I went on my own, you know, and I just didn't, nothing wrong with, at the time I didn't see anything wrong with Jason. I didn't see that I liked the job. You know, we did pretty good. You know, I think he was, it was like 20-30%. And, you know, I was good, but it wasn't my goal. My goal was to be a trainer. So, you know, I told Jason I was going to leave, and I left at the end of, I think it was like beginning of 2018. I left Jason here in Florida, and I have one horse, and I never asked Jason for any help. I never asked nobody for help. You know, I just, I called my uncle in you know, Cala. And I said, listen, I kind of want to start training on my own. And he asked me if I have any own. I said, no, but, you know, you got to start somewhere. I just kind of, you know, see anybody that, you know, is in Ocala that, you know, have a affiliate that they want to bring to Gulfstream. I want to try to borrow a couple stalls from a trainer and just kind of get things going. And he called me one day and I said, look, I have a friend that has a filly. They ran a Tampa one time, and she ran like Ford or something for $16,000 maiden. She's like a three years old. And I'm going to ask him if he, you know, maybe you want to buy it. And I said, yeah, I'm interested. So we called the guy, and he's a friend, you know, he's a friend of my uncle. And he said, I tell you what, I'm not going to sell her, but I'll let him train the filly and on a deal. So, you know, I got a little bit of money saved up, you know, from, you know, all these years. And, you know, I just bought a little townhouse with my second wife. And I said, well, I got a little bit of money. And, I mean, I don't really want to go into a deal, but I got to start somewhere. You know? So I take this filly. And, you know, she's not much. You know, I start going out there. And, you know, I'm freelancing and I'm training my little filly on the side. And, you know, I start running and. And I'm started thinking, like, man, I'm not going anywhere with this filly, you know. After a couple of starts, she don't run that good.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, I get another call from an agent that used to be a trainer, and he's a friend of mine. And he said, hey, listen, I got this guy. He, you know, he wants me to train his horses, but I don't want to train no more. I'm just kind of like, I'm an agent now, and he just wanted to train him for like, you know what I mean, like 60 a day or something like that. And I said, okay, let me talk to him and I'll see if I can do something. So I said, yeah, I'll give him your number. He calls me. The owner calls me. And he said, yeah, I'm trying to look for a new, I always like new trainers like that. This is all of a sudden. I don't have one horse. And this guy calls me all of a sudden out of nowhere. And Rodrigo Cunha is his name. He's got a Blueberry Farm is his farm. Those the first five horses that I got. And now it's on like six horses in training. You know, it was the happiest thing day of my life, I think, at the moment. And we agreed that I'm going to train his horses for like 70 a day, which to him seemed like a decent, you know, decent price. And it was, for me, it was good.
Yeah.
And I started off, and man, they were, I got so lucky. They were decent horses, you know what I mean? I liked them. And, it was something that I can work with, you know? And it was just a matter of putting them in the right spot. And, you know, the main thing for me when I get a horse, I don't care about being flashy. At first, I know you have to save money, so I don't care about buying the most expensive stuff and or getting my name on a outside the barn or anything like that. I just wanted the best feed for my horse and the best bedding for my horse, best hay, and the rest will come when the horses start winning. That's what I think. That was my idea from the beginning. And it took me about 10 starts, and it was with a filly named Alta Bambina. She was a five-year-old maiden that he told me that he had tried different trainers, and she was just really difficult to train. She didn't even want to go to the track, which she didn't. The first time I wanted to go to the track, I think I had to, like, back her up into the track because she didn't want to go.
Wow.
And then after a few tries, and I was really, really frustrated because I couldn't get a win. After, you know, just imagine after being with a trainer like Jason Service, that was like 30%, and I couldn't win my first 10 starts, and everybody's trying. I was already coming back from up north, and I haven't won a race. You know, I feel like I'll have something to prove. You know, but that win came. That win came after 10 starts, and towards the last month of the summer meet here in 2018, I won my first race, the Calder, with Alta Bambina, and I was, oh my God, it was like watching Sending cross the wire. You know, it was just unbelievable. She won, and then, you know, just kind of a first win, and then just kind of like brings you relief, you know, you're like, you know, like a weight lift off my shoulders, and now, you know, I can, and then everybody was really happy to see me win, And then, you know, I started, you know, getting some more winners and like that. And kind of got the ball rolling. But, you know, besides what everybody thinks, you know, I think that people are really quick to judge. They're really quick to point fingers because they're not there. You know, they don't understand. And if they're here, you know, they're just looking from the outside. You know, nobody helped me. Nobody. You know, not even Jason. Jason didn't send me owners. You know, he didn't give me a bucket. He didn't give me a feed tub to feed my horses. You know, I even got different colors because I didn't want anybody to think that he was helping me. You know, even though you know he was at the time. You know, there was nothing. There was no. You know, nothing wrong with the guy. You know, everybody thinks Jason is the best trainer in the world. And I still didn't want to be associated because, you know, I want to do my own thing. You know, I got black everything and he was like blue. You know, yeah. I want to do my own thing. I want to be known for what I am, for what I do, you know. And, you know, there's certain things that I do that, you know, that seem like, you know, the way that Jason trained, because I learned those things, you know, like I tried, like I said, I learned a lot of things from Billy Mann. I learned a lot of things from Brick Violet. I learned a lot of things from Steve Asmussen. But nobody's talking about that because all they know is the bad stuff. All they know is they associate the bad stuff, though. You know, that's what I'm saying. Like, this is what's wrong with the business. Everybody just focuses on the bad stuff. Nobody's looking back at, you know, what I did before that. Nobody's looking back what I did, you know, in those 3 years that I after I left Jason, that I was on my own and nobody really cared about me. I was still making a name for myself.
Well, that's the key, right, Carlos? That's the key, making a name for yourself, creating your own legacy. And now you've saddled 85 winners. You are coming off of your best season as a trainer on your own last year. You're off to a great start here in 2021, and things just continue to move forward, and it's all because of, as you just outlined, the hard work, the dedication. It starts to pay off at some point. I'm down, believe it or not, Carlos, to about 2 minutes left in the show. This has just flown by. And again, I know this is emotional for you.
Sorry,
I know it's been difficult.
You got me going, and I'm like, I won't shut up. But
I know how much it means
really good.
To you.
I'm really glad, that I got to speak my mind, and then people get to know me a little bit about what I've gone through and what I've done all these years, as far as training goes, because man, it's a life outside the racetrack too. People think that, we just, this is our lives, but we also have a life, and everything gets affected by it, because this is the main thing. This is, gets everything going. I spend most of the time at the barn, and unfortunately, I gone through two marriages because I think I spent too much with my horses. I think I'm the last one to leave the barn. I mean, I'm here. You come here at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you're probably. I'm here in the office. I'm trying to, figure it out. What is his fit my horses? I'm here with the blacksmith, talking to the dentist. This is what it's all about.
It's got to be all-consuming. It has to be all-consuming if you're going to be successful, and it has been for Carlos David. Carlos, I'm about out of time. Thank you so much for being here. All the best moving forward, my friend, and really appreciate the visit here on Trainer Talk.
And then thanks for everything, for giving me the chance to be on your show.
All right. He's trainer Carlos David here on Trainer Talk. Presented by Fasig Tipton. If you missed any portion of the show, the first half, very emotional for Carlos, head over to horseracingradio.net to check out the podcast. Make sure you follow us on social media as well, at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook and Instagram. Now for my special guest, Carlos David, for Lee Delapina in our Lexington studios, pushing all the right buttons. I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.